Hello, everyone. This is Renee Barbeau, and welcome to another inside edition of the Insider's Guide to Peru. And today we have a very special guest with us, Linda Fitch, Executive Director of the Four Winds Society and Dean of the Healing the Light Body School. Linda was my mentor and teacher, and she's the one who gave me the push from the nest I needed to claim my seat at the fire and step in as a healer. Some people know that I was pretty much the reluctant shaman. As lead teacher for the light body and master's level classes, Linda is responsible for staff development, teacher training, and mentoring. She is passionate about teaching and working at the level of the sacred to experience a life of grace, joy, and balance. Her latest project, Dying Consciously, is an online energy medicine hospice, bringing dignity back to all involved in the dying process. Her next dream is to expand her teaching through written and film media. If you would like to know more, get involved, or donate money to this great nonprofit, please visit dyingconsciously.org. Upcoming, we still have a lot of great presentations, and I can see by the numbers that hundreds of people have been downloading these past presentations by Elizabeth Jenkins, Jorge Luis Delgado, and Jamie Curtis from all over the world. It's really, really excited to be moderator of this great IU coming together here about Peru. Tomorrow we will have Stevie Bell who will share about the despacho ceremony. Next week we have Rosario Saria, a healer from Lima, and Maria Teresa Valenzuela will be on the call to help translate that. The three of us will be leading a medicine journey in Mexico in May on the 17th to the 22nd. And so if you want to learn more about that trip, go to the Practical Shaman .com, and there's a link there to the medicine journey and also a trip I have coming up in September for newcomers to Peru. And then last but not least, we have Bonnie Glass Coffin on March 14th representing the archaeologist viewpoint, and she's a senior student of Oscar Moreau Quesada. So we're really happy to have that perspective as well. Again, I can't say enough about how my heart is really full today to have Linda on the call. And I believe she's already opened up sacred space in her office, but we're going to be delighted as she takes us to her journey of the mountains. Linda?
Yep. Thank you, Renee. Thank you for inviting me. I just really have enjoyed being able to connect in again and, of course, to be able to talk about the mountains of Peru. And you came to Peru on Salkantay with me.
I did.
Yeah. So actually, you know, when I was putting my notes together, and so everybody knows that's listening in, I do have Sacred Space open and my Huitacocha, and of course would encourage anybody that understands that to go ahead and open your Huitacocha too and allow yourself to really be in that place where you smell all the smells of Peru, that, you know, the wool and of the ground itself. And I was putting my notes together to talk about going to the mountains and that practice of returning to the self. And it reminded me the first time when I went to the mountains, the first time I went to Peru, I actually did two mountain journeys back to back. And the reason I did that is I thought I would never go to Peru again, so I might as well do as much as I can to get it all in. And I had used our tax return. And my husband was so upset about it that I had taken our tax return, put it to the mountain journeys. And I had my parents come out because all my kids were little tiny at that time. Like, you know, I think Cody, my youngest, was still in diapers. So my parents came out. And Todd really wasn't, it's one of those things in a relationship, you know, we weren't really talking about my journey. I was collected all sorts of coats and jackets to take down to the little kids. And then Todd volunteered to take me to the airport. So we're in the truck going to the airport. And I looked at him. I said, you know, hon, thank you so much for taking me to the airport. I really, really appreciate this because I knew how upset he was about it. And I remember he looked at me and he goes, Linda, he goes, I just don't get it. Why do you have to go to Peru? And I remember I looked at him and I just burst into tears and started sobbing and said, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I have to go, but I know I have to go. And really that's what we want to talk about, is that what is that place that we, to connect back into the mountains. I knew I needed to go to that. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, is what is that journey? You know, what are the rites that happen that are connected to the mountains? And what happens to you? And really, my soul and my heart somehow knew that I needed to go to the mountains. You know, I had no idea that was what was going to happen. I'd never been called to Peru ever before, but I knew that somehow I just needed to go. And actually what happened is in my journey, and that's what I want to talk about and share, is the journey of that connection to the mountains changed my life. And I know, Renee, you mentioned to me that it changed your life too. So, yep, it's amazing. So really the journey to the mountains is a spiritual quest. The mountains hold a body of teachings that legend and lore talks about that can be known but not told, which means it's really about going and having that, experiencing it. And you've got to go to explore that place of the soul, that essence of who you are is what you connect in with when you go to the mountains. And we'll talk about the mountains in Peru. And Renee and I were visiting this morning that it's just not the mountains of Peru, although that's what I'm going to talk about. Really, many, many of you who are listening in are called to the mountains. You know, maybe it's the mountains outside of your town. Maybe it's a mountains on a journey. And it's so important that you respond to those calls, that call of your soul, that call of your essence, that inner longing. So, and when you do this, it's not really about just re-editing what you're doing. It really is about this depth of exploring who you really are. It's that deep inner look. Now, of course, for us to do that, you've got to get yourself out of the way. And that's the place where the journey makes the difference when you go. And it's really important that you go on the journey. There's a difference between hiking. And I grew up backpacking, hiking boots. I love this. But there's a difference between just hiking. And putting on your boots doesn't necessarily allow you that exploration of the self, that renewal of the self. So part of what we want to talk about, the difference between that camping or hiking experience and a spiritual quest. And once you understand that, then every time you put on your hiking boots, it's a spiritual quest because you're answering that place in your soul and looking at it. So what the mountains call you, and the call that the mountains give you is a really call to step into your life. It's not a tourist call. It's not about hiking through something. And a lot of times on Salkantay, which is that sacred mountain of the feminine, is that I'll see, as we're camping, we'll see groups that rush up, set up camp, and then rush off in the morning so that they can make as many miles as they can. And, of course, I fully agree with hiking and making as many miles as you can, but, again, it's that inner quest, it's that spiritual quest that first has to be the part of your grounding. It's not about just hiking up the mountain. It really is about what are you willing to see about yourself? Do you have the courage to really look deeply? And when you take that step and you make that commitment and you do that courage, you step in on the journey, then again, every time you lace up your hiking boots, it's part of that spiritual quest. It's part of that going to work on your life, going to know that you're going to the mountains for answers. You're going to mountains for that connection that the mountains offer. And I know, Renee, part of your guests are also speaking about the shamans and the carol that go with you. And I just want to put right in here a plug that, you know, the carol go with you on a journey, and sometimes we'll have people that go that really want healing from the carol. You know, they want to say, okay, let me go on my spiritual quest. Let me go to the mountains so the other person will heal me. The carol will heal me. And the carol go, but what the carol do is they open up a window through the despacho ceremony that Stevie's going to be talking about tomorrow and the beauty of that. But they really open up this window so that then allows you to step into your life. They'll hold space for you. They'll give you the rights that help you that step in. But we don't want to hold them from the place of that rescuer. Like, you know, heal me, make me better. You are on the mountain for your own journey. And you go with them because they'll hold you as they do it, not create that space. And it's so important to remember that the ceremonies that you do, the despacho, the fire ceremony, the critical part is that you do your own work to become present. And that's what I want to talk about. What is that like? I remember Alberto and I were visiting a couple of years ago about a similar acquaintance that we knew who had told me that they were doing lots and lots of ceremony, but their life wasn't shifting. They still had the same issues, the same heartache, the same all those kind of things. Their life wasn't shifting. And as we were talking about it, there's a difference between just, and Stevie will talk about despachos, but between sitting at a despacho and being really present for it, bringing all of yourself there, having the courage to take, this is all of me, and let me be here with spirit. Let me, and that's the ceremony. remember one of the times I went to, when that first journey I went to Peru, one of the mountains we did was Pachacutic. And Pachacutic's low enough that you could do fire ceremony versus Salkantay so high that the Caro go and the Laika go and burn the offerings that are made. But it's really cold. There is no trees up there. So we're at Pachacutic and it's our closing fire ceremony, and we had asked to put into the fire whatever we would like to put into the fire. It's a story I tell in our North work at the Light Body Program. And one of the things, so I took this stick, and of course I blew this very universal, anything that stops me from sitting with spirit, you know, not one thing, but anything that is stopping me from sitting with spirit, I blew my stick. Blew my stick, and then I put it in the fire. Was just, you know, so thankful, still loving the journey. And I had gotten home, and I was probably home about 2 weeks. And here I'm paid to be organized, to be able to find things. And typically I'm one of those that I can have a large stack of paper, but I kind of know where it is. Give me a few minutes, and I can thumb through it, pick out what we need to talk about. And I can't find anything. And I remember I was going to pick up the kids from school or from their daycare. And I'm just, it was at the place where I was starting to get worried about my job. I'm thinking, you know, I can't function. I mean, really and truly, I couldn't find anything. Couldn't find the papers, couldn't function at my job. And I'm driving to pick up the kids, and I'm thinking about this. I'm like starting to go into that fight or flight. You know, what is that going to mean? You know, I don't want to lose my job. I need the income for the family, those things. And as I'm driving, I get this sense of all of those things that I had was really good at. I could feel them just right beside me. And then I also remembered what I had just done in Peru on the mountain. That what I had really claimed is I'd said, let me be fully present. I'd had the courage to say, let me look at anything that stops me from stepping with spirit. And I realized I had a choice point, you know, that I could either bring back all those things or else I could choose a different job. And where I really went, I had to sit with myself, and then I went, great, you know, if those things of being competent is what stops me from sitting with spirit, I give them away. I let them go, I'll get a new job, you know, if that's truly. And of course, then as soon as I said, I step in, I have the courage to look at who I am and not get caught with that doing, not get caught with the role, then of course, then the skills came back, but I was able to hold it in a different way. This is what the mountains do. They allow you to go on a sacred journey, and you do it through the sacred sites. You do it through these places where you've had ceremony done for thousands of years, and then because ceremony's been done for so long on those sites, what it does is it accelerates your journey too. It accelerates your way. So in our journeys, when the Four Winds takes them to Peru, I'm adamant in the groups that go up to the mountains, is that you have to go on that personal healing journey. Again, this isn't a hiking trip. It's not just, it's really about how do you step onto your spiritual pilgrimage again and again, again and again. So then every hiking trip you take is a spiritual pilgrimage. So first of those is that when we go to Peru, is that you have to go on that south journey, you know, that you look at your stories, that you're not healing yourself by the stories you project on others. You know, really, that you have to look at what is it that brings me to the table. You have to do that inner journey first. We still want to change the world by changing those things around us, you know, whether it's we change the job or we change the significant others, versus we got to look inside and say, you know, who are we inside? Who's that inner journey? So, and then every time that you look outside, when you really understand that and how to do that, then every time you look outside, then of course what you're going to see is that your own internal peace, that place we call mirroring. So the universe becomes that beautiful, incredible mirror that lets us see inside. And it's that south journey. And so even if someone's gone, been through the light body training or been through the medicine wheel, we always, and every time I go to Peru, I'm back on this journey again. I'm back on looking and seeing who am I? Who is that place of the old story? Who is that place of the past that's still holding me? Who is that one that creates and writes that? I need to re-remember that I'm the author, that I have to write the story, that I can't say, oh, it's somebody else that's creating this for me. And I have to look at, you know, the way, what are the wounds that I hold? What are the places that continue, that I let hold me again and again? So then I give away the old form again. So every time I take a journal that holds all of the things that are going on for the expedition, you know, that talks about the high altitude sickness and bar medic and things to talk about there. But then I take a journal for myself, because it really is that we continue to go around the medicine wheel again and again. So it is that place that you experience when you go in the mountain to get ready for the mountains, to get ready to be in that. One is this place of looking at, what are you really willing to let go of? And you want to do that on the sacred sites. What are you willing to let go of? And know that you can do this from home. You know, as you travel your home mountains, as you get ready for summer, wherever you're at, as you get ready for your hiking, before you just go for a hike, take that time. Where are you in your journey? What are the old stories? Instead of telling them to someone at the mountains, what are you willing to let go of? What are you willing to let go of? So that's the first step on the journey to the mountain, is to first look at what is that part of that south journey. What holds us, those old stories, those old wounds, and what are we willing to let go of? I know recently I had something happen, and I didn't want to let it go. And I really had to do that deep inner search of what, why would I want to forgive this other person? What is it? Why do I want to hold on to that place of victim? You know, what's the old story? And to do my personal work around it. So then the next place in our journey, again, on another sacred site, out with the Karo, out with the Laika, so we'll explore not only the archaeology, we'll have a guide with us, but then you want to go then into then your West work, which is what needs to die, what needs to die. The shaman is that one that is very, very familiar and understands that life-death principle. I mean, engages it personally. Knows it personally. Where do you get caught in that triangle of disempowerment? We just talked about that victim or the perpetrator, the rescuer. So for our West work, we really work with that place of how do you hold your power? You know, and in our Western world, we've talked about that, or we talk about that there's knowledge versus information. And in our Western world, we hold back information, looking that we're holding back power from someone. But really, knowledge comes from the rights you're given on the sites. So we'll then, as we go to the site, looking at our West work, I'll do journaling. And everybody that's participating goes through, what do I need to die to? And maybe it's old beliefs, old values, old ways of looking at the world, old ways of holding things. You know, we want to be able to rebirth our jobs, rebirth our relationships, so that we understand that life, death piece, so that we can do that gracefully. And that's what the sacred site will help with. In addition, then the rites that you're given on each one of these sacred sites that will help you then do that leap. Do that leap to let go of, to do the death, without having it to pull your skin off, to, you know, really let that places go so that you can be reborn. So south and the west are first, and then on the journey that we go on is then to the north. And with that, let me talk first a little bit about the rites that happen and the rites that you get on each of the sacred sites and the Karo give them are like seeds. So they're seeds that allow you to connect even more deeply with the earth, even more deeply with the feminine. And even if you've already been to Peru, even if you've been through the Munai Ki, which gives the 9 rites of love, or you've been through the light body or the medicine wheel training, whatever tradition you walk, whenever you receive the rites, you receive them brand new. So every year I go through the same rites again. But the reason that they're brand new is because you're doing that inner work. You know, you're going back to the south and you're saying, who am I? What are those old stories that have now come to the surface that I need to let go of? Or for the west, what do I need to die to? What do I need to be reborn within me? How do I be in right relationship with that? So the container of who you are changes. And then your rites go in deeply and in a new way. So when we bring ourselves to the ceremony, so whenever before we do any kind of rites, we always do the despacho. So, and in the despacho is that I need despacho, that we come into right relationship with ourselves, with the south work, with the west work, with the north work, with the east work, put our prayers in. And then that affects the quality of the rites that we are able to receive. like the rights in full totality are given, but it's what can we receive? Where are we in a place, and what can we be have downloaded? So then we can be that caretaker and stewardship of the earth, the caretaker, connect to the feminine, align with our destiny. So these are the rights that you receive on the sacred sites as you go on journey. So we do the south and the west on sacred sites, and then we head to the mountain for the north and the east. And whether it's Pachatusan, Asungate, Salkantay, Veronica, or in as the journey, even on the Four Winds does a journey called the Via Luminata, all the time you're still connecting with the mountains. So on Salkantay, we go right to the mountains. Like our first camping site's at 13,000, 14,000 feet with it. And historically, this is where people have gone throughout time to connect with God, to sit with God, to claim the knowledge, and to anchor themselves into that place at the top of the mountains. And this is where you really start this journey of, why am I here? So again, even if it's to your own mountains, where you're at home with, or even if you come to Peru and then continue to do your journey at your own mountains, it's that taking that deeper look of, why am I here? What am I really here for? That you start to become that witness to your own journey. You become the witness to the sacred. You then, this is where it becomes that spiritual quest. It becomes a spiritual pilgrimage every time you put on your hiking boots. So, and you know, wherever you go, those mountains seem to pull up every challenge, every place of fear that we have buried within us. You know, whether it's the weather, whether it's the group we're with, whether it's hiking by yourself, who you see on the trail, conditions of the trail. I know sometimes we have, one of the times I was in Salkantay, we had a big snowstorm come in. And we're high up, and, you know, it gets dark at 5 o'clock. So everybody's in their tents. We're getting ready for dinner, and we get these awesome cooks and beautiful meals. And I had a stunning woman who came into my tent, and she goes, Linda, she goes, you have to send me down right now. And we're up. You know, we're not at our low campsite. Now we've gone to the second campsite. We're up at like 14,000, 15,000 feet. She goes, you have to send me down now. And so I called the medic in, and she, her blood pressure was a little high, but her oxygen was good. You know, her everything was fine with her. But what was happening is she had engaged with this place of finding a new inner journey within herself, this place within herself that she thought she was dying. I mean, truly thought she was dying. And then it was for her, this was her journey of really then owning this place of whatever needed to die and be let go of that didn't need to happen physically and work through that fight or flight. She was in total panic about it to really then be. So again, it brings up those challenges that we have. And when she got to the mountain and she got to the pass, we did a offering. It's called Apucheta, and I'll talk more about it. It's this amazing, and you can make them on your mountains, this offering made out of stones, like an altar that goes up to the heavens where you put your prayers on. So we had this beautiful Apucheta, and she was so strong and so vibrant. And she came up to me, and she goes, Linda, thank you for not sending me down. You know, she needed to go on her internal journey in order for her to find that strength and that beauty and that vitality that was her. I remember another time I had a Salkantay again, so one of my mountain here, and there was a woman that was almost, she was caught in this place of fear about food, like that she was going to starve to death. And typically we take a cook and the food is so good, even though you do the hiking, even though you, you know, you're cold, you're all those kind of things, a lot of times people end up adding weight while they're on the mountain. I mean, the cook's that good. We have fresh trout. And so she was in almost to a total panic. And Renee, you, as a chef, you've probably found this.
The food was great.
Around food. So she was, people had bought treats and I had brought extra stuff, but it was like she was hoarding food and she was almost in the starvation mode. Like she couldn't, she just kept thinking about food and what are we going to eat and what's this and what's that. And I actually had to pull her aside. And it was, all it was that, again, the mountain pulls up all those challenges for us. And it was just that reflection for her of a place where she was getting caught in the literal world, in the physical world, where she was getting caught in that place of the physical, because there's plenty of food. and healthy food and awesome food. It was really how we get caught. How do we catch ourselves? And sometimes it could be, you know, catching ourselves over. I've had people that haven't wanted to go because they're afraid of the cold. And even though I live in Park City, Utah, and love this beautiful snowy day that we're having today, you know, I get cold, and I'm not a big cold fan. And yet at the same time, I know that I have to move beyond that place of the physical, that it can't be a fear of the steep or a fear of, or if I have issues with climbing up a mountain by myself, then I know there's some place I have to look into it. So part of your journey, what it does in that sacred pilgrimage, you really learn how to become observer. Observer so that you can stay in the sacred, so that you don't get caught in the fears that plague us all the time. I mean, if we get caught in the fear the world is plaguing us with right now, then we'd be becoming immobilized. We could become frozen. So whether it's fear of not making it up the mountain, starving, dying, whatever it is, the mountain teaches you how to become a sacred observer so that you can observe how does your body walk? How do you walk softly? One of the things that we have journeyers do, which you can do too, anybody listening in, is that when you go on a hike or you're in a challenging place, get a stone. And then all those times when that challenge has come up, blow it into a stone. So then you're not holding it in your body, in the place of the physical. When we hold it in our physical, then many times, whether that'll give us the headache or it'll hold us in some way. So as things are coming up, the fears, whatever it is, we want to go back to nature. We want to be able to come back to that observer, back to watching and sitting in that place of the sacred. Same thing happens with our mind. Our thoughts, not only the physical that we find challenging, but the thoughts that come up, blow them into a stone, not to hold them in the body. It's that we want to learn, and you learn this when you journey, when you hike those mountains, when you put on those shoes. For me, every time I put on my hiking shoes, I realize, and I'm sure, Renee, you do the same thing too, that this is a, it's that you have those skills of becoming that observer. And that taking each step helps you go back to that. That's why we love it so much. That's why we adore it.
That's why I learned to love it, I should say. I'll never forget almost not making it up that Machu Picchu that first day.
Yeah. Yeah, Machu Picchu Mountain, that's right. You and I were on the mountain together.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, and how you have to step away from the heat or step away from whatever those beliefs, those thoughts. And you made it to the top. That fear, wasn't that fear of heights?
Well, no, that was the other one who was crawling up that last ledge.
Oh, that's right.
Joanne or Joan or something. That was a lesson in itself. I was told halfway up the mountain that enlightenment was not found halfway up the mountain.
Yeah.
And that's what kept me going to the top.
Yeah. And that's that place of looking inside where you're going, great, I've got to go through that experience of becoming that observer. Yeah. So we do the north and we do the Alto Masayoc rites, those rites that tie you to the top of the mountains while you're up at the mountains. Where you connect right, you know, legend and lore has that when we die, all of our knowledge goes to the top of the mountains. So from that place of the top of the mountains, then when we can connect in with that, that's what the Alto Masayoc rites help us do. Become a high mesa carrier, hold ourselves at the top of the mountains. And there's different levels of the Alto Masayoc, and they continue to grow. So every time you receive that Alto Masayoc, is then you can help embody the spirit of the mountains. You can speak to the mountains. One of my favorite things is to go to Salkantay and find a spot all by myself while we're groups are all working and ask my questions and then hear the guidance from the mountain for the next year. You know, and I spend time thinking about what is so critical that I need the wisdom of a mountain to help me with. What's so critical? What are the questions I need to ask? And what are the answers that I need to hear from the mountain that will help me then take my vision larger in the world to be able to be truly of service in the world. And this is what you do. This is what you get when you come, is you get a chance to also connect with the mountain. So then it's almost like a luminous cord that goes right from you right to the mountain. So then from now on out, whenever you ask your question, of course you can have it downloaded from the mountain. And there's nothing like being there. So the other thing we do is that we get the high rites of your becoming. is, and right now where we're giving them is at the High Lagoon in Salkantay, and the mountain invites you there, and so then what you do is you do your accounting at the top of the mountain, you know, where you have a chance to look and see, what are you creating in your life? What, this is where you have a chance to go way, way, way upstream to say, even before anything happens, to say, oh my gosh, what is this mirror that I'm creating? What is this, what am I creating out in the world? And then you have the next thing to say, and then what do you really want to create? You know, what do you want to dream in? What do you want to make yourself available for? You know, are you really willing, and what's stopping you? You know, are you really willing to be that person of grace, that person of power, that person of creating the business, whether it's a shamanic business or whatever your business is? I love yours, Renee, about that reluctant shaman.
I thought I was a businesswoman and the doorbell rang.
Yeah, and you have to make yourself available for it. Do you have the courage to do that? That's what the mountain will help you do. And that understanding might even happen, you know, a year later after your home, a month later after your home. But you have to go on that journey to step outside of time. And then there's rites you get, and right now we're giving them at the High Lagoon, where you helps anchor yourself, the Mosok rites, where you get way at the High Lagoon, and then you get the Daitanchis, the creator rites, that anchor you outside of time and allow you to step into that, be that creator for your life, and then, you know, of course, really for the world, that we're here not just on that very personal journey, but of course we're here on that global journey. You know, how do we be in service? Be in service for the stars, be in service for what you're creating. And when you do that, when you have that, then you connect in to that top of, when you go on the journey, you should connect into the top of the mountains. That all that wisdom and that knowledge that flows from the mountains, that kind of that ageless wisdom, then you become the chunk, like a link in the chain of knowledge, so that, like, it's the wisdom that you're holding, Renee, and each of the presenters that you're bringing in to talk about this magical country of Peru, where you recognize it's just not your story. You know, you're here on a global story of service, and that, and it's so important. I would encourage all of you who are listening in at any time is to go on that journey. Go to your mountains, whether it is one that are covered with glaciers or foothills, is that whatever they are, know that your mountains. In the north class of the light body, we have that teaching, remember, that you need to connect in with your Itu Apu and your Ayu Apu, and you always offer offerings to the mountains wherever you're located at. You move to a new place, say, great, whatever that is, or large body of water, whatever that is, hold me. So, and that's what we always want to do, is we want to do that journey, always remembering those mountains that hold us. Even if you live in the middle of a city, you're still held. You're still held by the mountains, great body of water. And when you do that, then you connect in with that, they call that Sami energy, that energy of creation, that energy, it's Sami, is the energy of source that gathers at the top of the mountains. And I really think this is why, if you picked up or looked at comics throughout time, history throughout time, that people have been drawn to those high places, that they associate that guru at the top of the mountains. And what you want to do is you want to become that guru, where you're not having to live at the top of the mountains, but you can source from the top of the mountains, that you can source from there. So, Renee, anything more that you want to add? I can talk a little bit more about the rites, or what else do you want to include about the mountains?
Well, you know, there's many ways of visiting the mountains in Peru. I mean, like Linda said, you don't have to go to Salkantay. You know, there's Ollantaytambo, and there's Day Mountains. Why do you think the mountains in Peru have a special calling to people? What do you think it is?
You know, part of it is not only are they part of those Seque lines that run, that Alberto has a great DVD that is called Serpent of Light that's talking about how all the mountains, you know, as you connect in with those, you connect in not only from the Andes, but then you connect in to Mount Everest. You know, you connect in with the Himalayas, you connect into Alaska and the mountains there, you connect into the Colorado Mountains. So, but the mountains in Peru, part of what is really there is that people have gone there and done ceremony. You know, it's, again, that difference between, so here I live in Utah, and one of the times I came back from Salkantay and the mountain while I was there said, Linda, you need to hike more mountains. You need to go to the top of more mountains. So we spent a good part of that summer, the family and friends, we did lots of hikes to the top of mountains. But it's what, see, what Peru offers, it isn't just about the hike to the mountain. What we did and what I did is every time you hike to the mountain, you have to do that ceremony. It is whether you do an elaborate despacho that Stevie's going to talk about. I'm pretty sure she'd probably talk about just prayer offerings. And somewhere to offer your prayers. So maybe it is part of your sandwich you leave there. Maybe it is a stone. And actually, that's what I'd probably recommend, is that you build a little apucheta. And so what an apucheta looks like is it looks like a small pillar that has stones with it. And typically in Peru, what we'll do is we'll continue to add to apuchetas that are working. And when you go up to Peru, you'll see all sorts of apuchetas at all the passes and at some of the other sacred sites. So at the mountains, because people have in Peru have gone there to do ceremony, they do exactly this journey that we've just talked about. They go inside. They do that inner quest. When we go to Peru and we do that at the high mountain lagoons, we have the horsemen that take us up and not only the guide and all the cooks and everything. You know what they do? Every single one of those comes down, and they come down to the lagoon off of the ridge, and they also offer their prayers at the apucheta. They offer their prayers in the form of stones, in the form of quintus, you know, the three leaves of coca that they put together, that you can use bay leaves here in the States. They offer their prayers and their gratitude. You know, their thank you, thank you, thank you to the mountain. Many light body students have all heard this story, but the first time I remember when I went to Pachitusan is where I learned to pray differently. And that's the mountain where we were going up, and now there's a road that goes up Pachitusan in Peru. And we were hiking up it, and we were with a woman who was a little bit, I think she was from just sea level, and then probably a little overweight, and she was just really struggling with the hike. And that very literal part of me of being from the mountains and growing up in Colorado and lots of experience, I kicks in of, you know, oh my gosh, you know, is there water on the lungs? Is there water on the brain? You know, all the, she's got high altitude sickness, all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, you know, my stuff's going on. So the shamans stop us and they say, we're going to say some prayers. And they, and I'm thinking, good, we need to pray for this woman. You know, she's in danger. We need to pray for her. And what they had us do is they opened up their little bags with the coca leaves, and we all took our little quintus, and they pulled them out. And what they did is they told us through the translator that what we needed to pray for is that we needed to say thank you. Thank you for getting me, not her, thank you for getting me this far up the mountain. And then we put our prayers to the wind because we were using quintus, and then we went up, we hiked, you know, another half hour, another hour, opened their bag. We said prayers. Again, thank you. Thank you for getting me this far up the mountain. And we hiked up that mountain saying thank you. And it's such a different way to approach a mountain, where every step, so whatever those challenges come up, or we say thank you. You know, thank you for getting me this far up the mountain again and again and again. And then say that place. So the mountains hold those places of gratitude. And it's where we need to, I would say, for all of us, to learn how to pray in that way and offer those prayers of gratitude and honoring and ceremony at the mountains. Build a little apucheta. That's what calls us. That's why, and that's why our prayers are answered. You know, that deep place of gratitude. Thank you for my life. Whatever it is, you know, significant other, no significant other, job, no job, kids, no kids. Whatever it is, thank you for my life. That's what I think is the difference. That's what calls us.
So, Linda, there's a lot of people. I did a survey when people registered, and there seems to be a lot of people going to Peru in the next year or this year. What would you suggest to people, besides for saying their prayers of gratitude, which I have seen people who are deeply spiritual make it up the mountains easier than people who were fit, but what would you tell people to start to prepare? How would they get ready to go for a hike?
You know, the first thing I would do is, thanks for asking, Renee, is I would take time, because this is, a lot of people show up in Peru, and we actually send out a newsletter saying the same thing, or that, you know, the people that are coming, this is how you need to prepare, besides the physical, which I agree, so much more important. First thing is I would recommend that you find that place of stillness for yourself. You know, what is this calling that you're doing deep in your soul? You know, what is this longing, this spiritual, this sacred pilgrimage that you're going on, this spiritual quest that you're going on? Really say, who is this inside? Who's this container that wants to go up the mountain? Spend some time in stillness with it. And then I would do prayer offering or prayer right where you're at home, you know, to prepare yourself. Let me be here. What is it? Because, you know, any time we go, it's a airline ticket, it's the cost of the journey, it's the guides. I mean, it's the whole package. So it's a commitment of both time and money. And this year, you know, 2012, oh, my gosh, so significant. So that commitment to go. So I would recommend first spending time by yourself, really identifying for yourself what is this quest that you're going on and doing ceremony around it. Whether it's a fire ceremony, put your prayers in the fire. You know, Spirit, let me be present. Let me be here. Thank you, thank you, thank you for letting me go on my journey. You know, thank you. This is the clear back to the first. Todd looking at me, Linda, I don't understand it. Why do you have to go? Why do I have to go? Doing that in fire with it. And then I would recommend that everybody takes a journal that's just yours and that you spend as much time as you can in stillness at the sacred sites to prepare. I mean, so beforehand, and then when you're there, that you spend as much time in sacred sites. Because really where we want to do is that in a pilgrimage, it's a visceral experience. It's not a head knowledge. So I could tell you a whole ton of books to read, but the more important part is that you are willing to answer those questions, or what are you willing to put on the line? You know, really, what is holding you? What are the old stories that are holding you? Take yourself on the journey before you go. And then when you step down there, then you've already been through it once, then you can really be present when you're down there. Spend time by yourself. Journal. Don't feel like that has to be a chatting experience to talk to people up the mountain or talk to people down the mountain or talk to people on the sites. I might say the same thing when you go hiking at home, wherever home is for you. You know, allow yourself those deep places of stillness and sitting by yourself, not having to occupy the moment so you don't notice what's happening in your body. That's a lot of times why we talk or we get caught, is because we're challenged, you know, or we feel like this is a time to connect and just chat with others. So that's what I would recommend. Back to ceremony.
And do you think that there's any real significance to 2012? Is this a good year to go to the mountain? Is it our last year to go to the mountain? What do you think?
Well, I sure plan on continuing to go. And actually, Luce and I were even visiting about maybe even doing two journeys next year in 2013, maybe do both mountains, Asangate and Solkantay.
In one trip?
No, two different trips. But I have, you and I don't know if I've visited with you, but I have thought about doing two trips because I started back-to-back, of doing journeys back-to-back.
Right.
I think 2012 is, the way that I'll talk about it in classes, it's this window. So, you know, we had all sorts of stuff that was happening prior to 2012 and into 2012, and then we'll have our solstice, and then we'll still have things that are happening 2013, 2014, you know, 2015. So I look at 2012 as a window, but what's cool is the window's wide open in 2012. It is held fully open. Now, the thing for me that's really special, why I would encourage people to go this year for 2012, is what 2012 is doing is it's giving us this amazing accelerator. So it's accelerating all the things that we haven't healed yet. You know, they're up in our face. Oh, my gosh, the people that are in crisis right now. And even we have an upcoming class, and we were just talking about, because there's some people that can't come, and one of the predominant reasons is they have lots of family members in crisis. So it's just pulling up everybody's places that need to be looked at and need to be healed. And then the other thing that 2012 is giving us is then this opportunity, the same accelerator that's giving us this opportunity to heal it quickly. So it's moving through things quicker than I've ever experienced before. You know, instead of having to have a year or months to heal, it's moving everything along. It's part of that lore that talks about that we'll go through a full lifetime in a, you know, in a month, in a year, in a full lifetime in a month, in a full lifetime in a week, in a full lifetime in a day. That's what 2012 is giving us. And then you add that on top, and then here's the piece why you want to add Peru on top of this, is then when you do that depth of your work, going through your south, your west, your north, and your east, that internal journey, when you do the depth of your work on those sacred sites, what it is, it's that next accelerator. So you're not only taking 2012, and then you're doing all of the sacred sites of Peru, that they germinate the seeds of your becoming. You know, all those, when you're calling in what you want in your life, 2012 is accelerating it, then you do it on a sacred site, and my gosh, those sacred sites that have held ceremony for thousands of years just take those seeds of what you want to create, and the roots grow deep, those stems grow tall. You know, it just allows you to step into your... You create almost instantaneously.
So, Linda, what are some of our North America mountains that align with the energies of the Peruvian mountains that people who can't go to Peru might go visit?
You know, Renee, I've had mixed feedback on that, so I don't know if I can give you totally accurate. A lot of those are the Native American sacred mountains, so which includes from the Navajo or the Hopi, so you could look at the sacred mountains that are there. In addition to the sacred mountains from the Native American up in Alaska, and Denali, those, you know, that are in Alaska. And then I've got a group of some of our graduates that work with the sacred mountains on the East Coast. You know, in Colorado or Utah, we would call them hills. But truly, they work with the sacred mountains that are on the East Coast, in addition to tribes that work with them on the West Coast. So what I would probably say is, you know, where does it... What's your Itu'apu? Where's your source from? Where are you held your Iu'apu? What's holding you right now? And then connect in with those mountains.
Would you tell people, I don't know if everyone on the call knows what your Itu'apu is.
So your Itu'apu is your birth mountain, which means, so we'll talk about this in class, but it's the one that's been, or it could be a large body of water, that's been looking after you since you were born. And I'll tell people in class, you know, it could have been worse. You know, whatever, how bad it was, whatever, it could have been worse. So your Itu'apu was the mountain that was looking over you. Where I was born in Colorado, I have one of the sacred, that happens to be one of the Navajo mountains. It's called Mount Blanca. And so in a sacred mount that was, I played under it at the river as a kid. You know, I loved it. I got pictures of it from high school, from college. So this sacred mountain, and I hiked up it, you know, those as I got older. So that's the one that really held me. So everybody needs to think back, you know, where were you, or what was that place that held you when you were growing up? So maybe you moved a lot as a kid, but you always did your vacations in the Adirondacks. You know, what were those mountains that held you? And that's your Itu'apu. And what we have to do is, what we want to do is, we want to come into right relationship with that mountain, meaning we want to be in Aini with it. So we want to bring it to honoring. So what students do is they prepare a small prayer offering, a small bundle that goes up to that mountain. So, and buried, you know, or could be burned up at the mountain. So it's giving back, where you give your thanks. Thanks for looking after me. You know, thanks for me, I was like, you know, thanks for all those amazing fun times that we had down at the dikes, you know, that we played right on the river that came right from the mountain. So that gratitude. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's your Itu'apu. And then your Iu'apu is the mountain where you are now, or the large body of water. Where do you live now? And how do you come into relationship? And you have to also come in relationship with that mountain. And you give your gratitude and your thanks. So my Iu'apu is the one that I see from my front yard. It's not as tall as some of these that are on the Wasatch Front in Utah, but it's the one that holds me. You know, it's the one that I have given my thanks to. And even though I've hiked lots of other mountains, then that's still the one that I say thank you, thank you to. And then every time I go up to a mountain, a little altar, a rock altar, can be three stones. that could be your apuchetta for someone, 3 stones. It doesn't have to be really big. Just last year, I took my 2 of my kids went with me last year up to Salkantay, and my youngest one, he's a Boy Scout, and he's an amazing hiker. And I've noticed since we've been back, we did a little bit of hiking after we got back, and he just unconsciously, when he's hiking, and he'll take a few minutes, and he doesn't say anything to me, of course, and he'll build where he's at just a little tiny 3 or 4 stones. He'll stack them up as a little altar. It's amazing.
How great for him.
Yeah.
That he learned that at such an age.
Yeah.
Let's see, is there anything else you want to share about your mountains? I remember when I was to go to have a little despacho at my Inti Apu, and I go to say thank you, and I stood up and I was face to face with a bear.
Oh, wow.
So that was quite the experience, and I thanked the bear for coming, and I told him he didn't really need any of my cookies, and we had a nice encounter.
Wow. That's an amazing story, Renee. Yep.
That was one of those days. So tell us about the mountain trips you're leading this year, or you said the Via Luminata. Will they visit any mountains on that trip?
So the journey that still has slots available is the Via Illuminata, and what they do is they go to the sacred sites. They don't do that National Geographic quality hike up to Salkantay or Asangate. That would be next year, or Pachatusan, which Marcella leads a trip up there. But the Via, what they do is you will see the sacred mountains and can connect with them. You know, so as you do your ceremony, you can offer your prayers to the mountain and connect with them. So that's the one that I would recommend for this year if people wanted to go with Four Winds. And again, the beautiful part is that, and that's Alberto's journey, the Via, is that you have a chance to sit with Alberto, and he actually leads you on that journey around the medicine wheel, that south, that west, that north, that east, and all the rites that then go with that. You receive those on the sacred sites.
Plus, whenever you go to Peru, though, you do need to get in a little bit of shape because you are at a higher altitude at a lot of the different places anyway. So isn't that true?
You know, I recommend that. For me, the more that I'm in shape, then I just feel more at ease. Remember, I was giving a talk once, and we were mentioning about the journeys to Peru and to be in shape. And there was a woman there from Holland that I said, hey, why don't you share about your journey? And she stood up and she goes, you know what? I didn't do any preparation. I didn't do any extra hiking. I didn't do anything. And I was great. I was like, you're kidding. So I recommend that you know, and again, it's that dance between that physical preparedness, that extra walking, the extra hiking, running, yoga, you know, your physical preparedness and your spiritual preparedness. I've seen people that come in that are very physically fit, and they have done that piece about it, but really their internal journey was, you know, how I would amazing woman that came from Germany, and her journey really very, very strong, but really were part of it. She was working through with some of those culture pieces of being able to be in community, not having to be by herself all the time, really develop a softness to come to that place of the feminine is what her journey was. And the mountain really took her on a ride for a day or two, and she just had to surrender, totally surrender. And as she did that, then, of course, then she became strong again. So
that's always
that
good
dance
to know.
Yeah.
So before, I just want to say, is there any last parting words before we say thank you and then open it up if there's some questions for you?
It would just be encouraging whoever's listening to go on their own spiritual pilgrimage. You know, that is so important that we get caught in our day-to-day rush. And with that of recognizing not only the personal one, but really much that, very much that global piece. I'm so struck every time I go to Peru, and not just Peru, but the need that we have is to dream the world into being at the global level. You know, that to step outside of time, go to that source, go back to nature, find those places of balance. So I would encourage everybody listening to, yes, 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 come to Peru, and do it now. You know, do your journey now. Don't just wait till you go to Peru to really become that dreamer for the world.
Great. I really want to thank you for this, and also to remind everyone to visit the Four Winds Is it thefourwinds.com or?
Thefourwinds.com, or you could go to Peru, or if you need the email, then you could go to Peru at thefourwinds.com, and it's spelled out thefourwinds.com.
And also, if you would like to be an INE for her great presentation, you could consider donating or getting involved with her dyingconsciously.org. And also, if hiking really isn't in your future and you want to visit Peru to just get connected with the mountains, you can do the Via Illuminata, or I'm taking a group called Magic Mountains and Mysteries in September. We're a little bit more luxury-oriented in our visit to the mountains. We kind of do the kind of the lazy man's hike, but we do some hiking, and you do need to get in shape. Hey, Linda, have you heard about, one last thing before I close, have you heard about the four-star lodging along Salk and Tai?
I have. Yeah, I've actually seen it. Is that what you're wondering?
Yeah, just curious. I've been thinking, oh, that might be a nice trip where you can hike during the day and sleep in a lodge.
The lodges are stunning. Actually, Renee and I toured them. The thing is that you have to sign up. They have a whole package that you have to go, and you have to stay in all the lodges.
And so you have to just do it with their tour.
You have to do it with their tour. And, you know, then it's even though it's luxurious, it's that spiritual, you know, that spiritual quest. So that's that dance, as you know, about having tea delivered to your tent door.
I love the tea delivered to my tent. And I always bring coffee and a coffee drip or two when I go.
And you taught me how to do that, and I do that now. From ever since we traveled together, I always bring the fresh French.
Good. I'm glad I could teach you something. You've taught me a lot over the years. So we're going to close this, and then we're going to open it up for questions. So if you have some questions, what I'm going to do is let me stop the recording and hit so you can unmute yourself by pressing star 6. Hold on 1 second.